Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, 803 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Bringing in the voice of soccer in the city of Houston. So disappointing on Saturday morning. I wish you'd have come out, Glenn, to the Knicks place and seen with all the people. We were so excited at that goal and so disappointed by the Netherlands goals. I think it was just such
they took away the joy electric with that third goal. At least you had the hope of equalizing, and then, man, just before you knew it, bang,
and
goal
then,
three.
And all the Coors Lights that we enjoy. Glenn Davis joining us here as the run is over for USMNT. Glenn, welcome in. How are you?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance.
How are you doing?
Doing okay. Absolutely, feeling a little bit sad about the U.S. being knocked out, but there's other ways to look at this.
Okay. Tell us the positives that you saw.
Yeah, there's definitely pros and cons to this. I mean, look, we saw a very youthful group of guys that on this stage, I think, were taking the game to opponents from an attacking standpoint. This wasn't a U.S. sitting back. I think that's one of the big, big takeaways in this tournament. Did we ever think the Dutch were going to be adapting their tactics for the United States? Well, that's kind of what happened in that game. And you might say, they won the tactical battle. But I think from the perspective of the way we played and the type of soccer that was played, this is definitely another climb up the rung of the ladder here in the evolution of the United States in international soccer. And look, nobody wants to lose. We all wanted more, right? No question. But I think you guys remember me saying I was concerned about the fatigue of the core of the team, the three midfielders and the two outside backs. And they did look fatigued, even though they were trying to push through it. And if you looked on the first goal, Tyler Adams didn't track a guy out of midfield. Serginho Dest and Robinson struggled on the other two and three goals. So a lot of our key guys, in my opinion, no excuse, were a bit fatigued getting into this game.
Is that why he started Ferreira? Is it because of fatigue even up front?
Well, that's a tough one, because that's just another big example of the big glaring obvious thing is we don't have, and this country is not producing now, primary goal scorers. And I know there's somebody out there going, oh, you should have taken Ricardo Pepi or Jordan Pefok. Okay, that's easy to say now, right? But we as a country, we have to figure out how to develop goal scorers, because it's all good and well if you can get up the field and get into good areas and good goal scoring positions, but you don't take what's yours, right? You could have had an easier first round if you had a more clinical striker, conserved a lot more energy for the knockout stages.
Well, I mean, you can watch England, for example, and they can score, and they have, and Harry Kane is not the most gifted athlete in the world, but you want to talk about a guy who understands, and of course that's a tremendous international goal scorer, but you watch him with his goal a couple days ago, and it was just what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago? Maybe it was yesterday. I can't remember when England played. Oh, it was yesterday. I mean, that's what it looks like to be a finisher in the final third, and in England has that. They have multiple finishers like that. Many of the countries.
Well, all the big teams do.
They all have
a primary goal scorer. I mean, even if Memphis Depay was our number nine in our center forward, we would have scored more goals in the first round, right? Mm-hmm. Mbappe for France, although he does it in a different way, coming from a wide area, but he still gets into the box and scores goals. So that is one of the big differences between the Argentinas, the Frances, the Englands of the world. But back to your question, John, we're starting Jesus Ferreira against the Dutch in a knockout game, and the guy hasn't played a minute in the tournament yet. That's how desperate we got when, Josh Sargent goes down injured. Mm-hmm. Haji Wright really isn't producing much. So, it's a glaring, obvious problem. and the good news is now you got to try to figure out how to solve it.
They look slower, Glenn. They look like there wasn't a lot of movement. They look like the passes weren't crisp. Was that basically just fatigue from the tournament?
I mean, look, we can condition this any way we want. These can't be excuses. But I do think that core group of guys I mentioned were a little bit overwhelmed. And listen, 2 minutes into the game, you get a glorious chance. If Christian Pulisic sticks that in, you never know what the power of goals do, especially against a team like the Netherlands. So that would have pulled the Netherlands out, broken their tactical plan, because they were going to have to chase the game, not sit and absorb and try to hit the U.S. on the counter, which they did super effectively.
They really did. Is Berhalter the guy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because, you know, I'm listening to a lot of people, and I think about this myself, and, you know, do you give another cycle to that coach? Well, you know, Deschamps is on his third cycle with France. There can be bashing of Greg Berhalter as much as U.S. fans want to, but this guy got you to the next round. This group of players, whether you like his decisions and choices or not, certainly were playing for him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those are two things that stick out to me. Yeah, I don't know. He says he's going to take 4 or 5 weeks to think about what the future is. But he's laid a good basis of stuff. I mean, you know, principles of play and things and team identity. So, you know, you got to think carefully and long and hard about what you're going to do with your next choice.
How many guys will be how many guys from this World Cup team? You have the basis, you have the foundation. Will the majority of the 2026 team be from this, or are we going to get younger guys in here?
Yeah, I think there's a guess. It's, you know, on my part is, you know, somewhere around probably 10, 11. But here's the beauty in this thing. First of all, they set a good example to youth all over the country. So there's a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old somewhere who's going to be in this World Cup in 2026. And all these young guys now that are either playing in the pros or are going to get into the pros in the next couple of years are going to want to get on this train with Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams. So the competition and the desire now for pros that are Americans that could represent the U.S. in 2026, this is incredibly healthy because it's just driving it even further. Who does not want to be on a U.S. World Cup team with those guys? And that energy and that desire and that pride in 2026.
What's the youngest a player could be? Because there's a buildup to it. And we hear, you know, in other countries you have players who are very young. Is there a chance there's a 14 or 15-year-old right now who could be playing for the national team in 2026 when they're 18 or 19? Or is that just too young from a developmental standpoint?
No, that's possible. I mean, how much they would be doing for the team, I don't know. I don't know if you guys remember, in 94, when you look at the World Cup winning Brazilian photo, right, you'll see like an 18-year-old Ronaldo, the real mm-hmm. Ronaldo, right?
Yeah.
And he's in the picture, and he was just brought to get experience. Now, that's Brazil. So, you know, you never count anything out, but I don't know how many, you know, 18-year-olds were dominant in this tournament. You saw Jude Bellingham of England at 19, so... You know, who knows where the game is going to be in 4 years and how player development's working.
Freddie Adu, that worked out. So we got that. No, that didn't work out at
all.
Hey,
and by the way, Bellingham and Declan Rice got totally outplayed by Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Yunus Musa.
Absolutely. Can you teach McKennie to a shot on goal that'll be on the ground as opposed to 20 feet over the goal? Can you teach him? Yeah. That'd be great. That'd be great.
He did have 3 shots that went flying this World Cup.
All the other the knockout games. What surprising you right now? And what do you see going forward in this World Cup?
Well, I don't think a lot surprised us when it went to traditional nations. So we got Argentina, Netherlands, and France, England. I mean, those are two unbelievable quarterfinal games. We'll find out how the Asian teams do today. Look, even England against Senegal got a bit of a scare early in the first 30 minutes. Senegal should have went up in that game if not for Jordan Pickford in goal. But then you know, in the blink of an eye, you're a few minutes into the second half, and you're up 3-0, right? And what a great way to play that game for England, to conserve themselves and kind of get through that match. I mean, that ball that Bellingham played to Jordan Henderson, fantastic.
Yeah, it's I don't know. This could be England's year to really get deep. We'll see how it plays out. We'll have you back on, Glenn. The U.S. Yeah. is out, but there's still some powerhouses still to go.
Listen, as much as I hate seeing the U.S. go out and we lose that kind of dream, there's going to be some incredible stuff, including today. So
absolutely. That's Glenn Davis, brought to you here on the show, and of course with Soccer Matters by the John Daspit Law Firm. You can go to DaspitLaw.com for all your personal injury needs. DaspitLaw.com.
Glenn, as always, man, we appreciate it. We'll work out when we're the next time, okay?
You got it, John. Thanks, Lance. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Buddy.
Appreciate it.
There's Glenn Davis, the voice of soccer. The voice of soccer, period, exclamation point.
I had some really good news happen yesterday for our family, for my wife. I was, my wife told me we went to a play last night, and she said, I was able to do today. And she squatted down like a catcher almost, like looked like machete, getting down into catcher stance. And that's a huge, huge deal, because before she went to QC Kinetics, couldn't do it. The bone-on-bone issue in the right knee just wouldn't allow for that flexibility. And she's starting to get the flexibility back, which is a great sign. It means what they're doing at QC Kinetics is starting to work. Now, they knew she had a lot of work to do, so it's the 5-step process. But through the first 4, she is seeing results. Not only less pain, but now we're starting to see some mobility as well. And I've been telling you guys, this is what they do. This is why professional athletes go there. She's actually seeing it firsthand, and this is something that really has given her excitement that she'll be able to run again. Certainly, she's excited about getting that mobility back. If you are someone who is dealing with chronic pain in your hip, your knee, your shoulder, your back, I don't care what joint it is, go with regenerative medicine. This is a way to restore and regenerate damaged tissue in the joints using the body's own healing powers. It's really amplified. They put it back into the joints, and what you see is not only restoration of damaged tissue, but rejuvenation, and that means that you've got a chance to get back to being the real you. Not just eliminate that chronic pain, but get mobility back and be more active once again. This is a tremendous way to do it. The old ways of shots, surgeries, downtime, and drugs. Listen, if you got to go that way, I understand, but the first thing you should look into is calling 713-913-5285. That's QC Kinetics, 713-913-5285. That's QCKinetics.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.